Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And by Antioch University New England, offering doctoral degrees in clinical psychology, environmental studies, and marriage and family therapy, as well as master's degrees and certificates. antioch.edu/nhradio.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A highly watched vote on so-called net neutrality takes place in Washington next week. On December 14th, the Federal Communications Commission will decide whether to change the rules governing internet service providers like Comcast, Verizon, or AT&T. It's a decision that's been cast in dramatic terms, but FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has long said his plan is not that dramatic, describing it simply as a return to policies that existed until 2 years ago. Still, the proposal has created an enormous uproar, with opponents saying it will destroy internet freedom and crush innovation. And so today in The Exchange, we find out what it all might mean, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guest is Rob Fleischman. He's principal architect at Akamai, an internet infrastructure company based in Cambridge. Rob has clients on both sides of this debate. And Rob, thank you for helping us out with this, and welcome back.
Laura, it's always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just start with the basics, Rob, before we jump into what happens next Thursday. And lots of chatter leading up to this vote.
You bet.
Who are the actors in this play, Rob?
Okay, well, we have folks on, I would say, on the pro destruction of the regulations side, more the internet providers, right? So what's an internet provider? They're folks like Comcast, Time Warner, Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, but also they're the hardware providers to that business who are also on their side. Cisco, Juniper, Ericsson, IBM, Qualcomm, Broadcom, all of those large gear providers to the internet industry. So I would say that folks who provide internet service and are highly tied to delivering that business are really on Chairman Pai's side for deregulation, rolling back these 2015 Title II network neutrality rules.
Well, and since you mentioned Chairman Pai, talk a little bit more about him, if you could please, Rob. He was appointed to the FCC by President Obama and elevated to chairman by President Trump.
That's right. So Chairman Pai has a good legal background. He, very accomplished, very smart guy. Really spent his life in regulation and communication. Actually was a lawyer for Verizon for a while. Now he's, of course, the chairman of the FCC. And he's really, I would say, more libertarian. You know, he believes that we need to unlock, these providers from heavy-handed regulation, as he calls it, to really light touch. And that's sort of his thesis. He really believes that, in fact, this bill, this action is called Restoring Internet Freedom. That's actually what he calls it.
Let's hear a little bit from the chairman. Here he is speaking at the R Street Institute. That's a libertarian-leaning think tank. And Chairman Pai has maintained throughout this whole process that all the uproar that you hear about this on the internet is overstated. He says it's very simple what he's trying to do.
The plan to restore internet freedom will bring back the same legal framework that was governing the internet 3 years ago today, and that has governed the internet for most of its existence. Let me repeat this point. The plan will bring back the same rules that govern the internet for most of its existence.
So the same rules that govern the internet for most of its existence, up until 2015, not that long ago. So Chairman Pai's been saying, what's the big deal?
Yeah, sounds really reasonable. He's got an interesting spin on this. A couple things to consider, though. First of all, the internet changes quite radically, right? I mean, if we go back even to 2015, the whole thing about autonomous cars, right? There were none of those. We You know, our phones weren't near. We did have smartphones, of course, in 2015, but they weren't as powerful. They didn't do quite as many applications. We weren't doing quite as much video streaming back then, and certainly not high-def video streaming back then. So the world's a different place. So, you know, that's like me saying, you know, let's just go back to the 1950s. There were no problems, you know, might have some issues with women's rights and things like that. But, you know, it's not really a genuine argument, in my opinion.
2015, though, doesn't sound like that long ago, Rob. So what really has changed? You touched on it, but go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, our use of the internet certainly has changed. There are a lot more providers of content. You know, the content side has really exploded. And we're talking about giant people who, you know, like the Googles and the CNNs and the CNBCs and the Foxes. But if you think about something else, you know, the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, World Cup, they're streaming a lot of data. And that really has changed, right? The consumption of the Olympics through NBCOlympics.com last Olympics was tremendous, up by orders of magnitude from previous Olympics. So our use of the internet is different. Our dependence on neutral content delivery is much more important. And well, you have to remember, right, what we're really saying here, you know, just to for our brass tacks here, net neutrality is really treating all legal data, right? Not illegal stuff or abusive stuff, but treating all legal data the same is what network neutrality really is. So a provider should not discriminate based on the user, the content, the platform, right? If whether you're using a Mac or PC or whatever, or a mobile device, or the application, you know, what application you're running. And they shouldn't slow down, charge fees, or block those type of services, right? So now that we're more dependent on the internet for delivery of things that, you know, previously, a few years ago, we would get maybe by traditional cable or television, broadcast, radio, et cetera. You know, the internet's become much more of an important delivery channel in the last few years. So I think the world's changed. And I think the FCC's attempt to roll back, you know, saying, hey, everything's cool, we're just going back to the way it was, I'm unsure that applies.
We should dig into this a little bit more.
Absolutely.
For sure, Rob.
Absolutely.
Let me invite our listeners to join us as well. Your questions and comments about so-called net neutrality. A highly watched vote on this takes place in D.C. next week, December 14th. The FCC will decide whether to, as Rob's been explaining, change the rules governing internet service providers like Comcast or AT&T, whether to go back to the previous rules that were in place before President Obama's FCC changed them in 2015. That's what we're looking at. We'd love your questions or comments. 1-800-892-6477. Your thoughts about net neutrality and what it means for all of us. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. So at the outset of our conversation, Rob, I asked you who the actors are in this play. You described the internet service providers, not just the Comcast and AT&Ts, but also the companies that make the stuff, maybe some of the hardware, if we could put it that way. So when we say content providers, now who is that?
Sure. I mean, that's traditional people like Google and Facebook, right? And we have people like CNN and CNBC and Fox. But we also have people like bloggers, you know, the millions and millions of people that put content online. We have people on Etsy, right, that are providing things, vendors, Amazon, and all those who supply Amazon. So basically anyone with content. But things get blurry here, right, because you have people who are on both sides, right? You have people like Comcast that have a giant relationship with AT&T. I'm sorry, with NBC. Right. So you have large corporations that have both delivery and content. And it's really fascinating. You start talking about people like Netflix, who everyone thinks of as, hey, we're this giant content provider. But they also have a lot of infrastructure. So it's, you know, it gets a little murky there.
Yeah. So unmurkify it for us, if you could. So what do the ISPs, the Verizons of the world, what would they like Chairman Pai to do? You said earlier that he's basically doing it.
Yeah, they're mostly in favor of rolling back these regulations. And their justification is simply things like, well, you know, you're heavy-handed, you're a government agency, you know, you should let us innovate, you shouldn't put heavy regulations on us. And you know, their arguments go to things like, hey, there are, you know, Chairman Pai says there are 142 small wireless ISPs. You know, people like Laura Kanoi sets up a wireless tower and becomes Kanoi.net, you know, and runs her own little internet company.
But...
Right. And he says, hey, you know, there's a lot of regulations that Laura, this small internet provider, would have to, you know, comply to. And that costs money. And these large providers are, you know, they're going to delay expansion because they have to pay more. They have to, you know, make sure that they conform to all these FCC regulations. So, you know, in his sort of libertarian slant, his view is the less we do, the less the FCC does, the less we put our finger on these providers, the more innovation, the faster the internet will go. And you know, if you look at the internet speeds and technology that we have versus Europeans and other areas on the world, we're behind.
Yeah. Broadband in this country, internet.
So that's right. That's sort of his argument, you know, that we want to let these people innovate and get out of their way.
So part of what this would allow these companies to do, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, is if you want faster uploading of your Netflix, you pay for it.
Well, okay, let's not jump too far.
But not all content is created equal.
Let's not jump too far ahead. Okay, so what it allows them to do, what they would do, what they theoretically do, those are all interesting discussions. But what the Restoring Internet Freedom Act does is it really just pulls FCC oversight away. So it says, look, we're not going to keep an eye on you. We're not, you know, we're going to push it all off to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. So we're going to remove the rules that say you can't do certain things, right? It doesn't say, hey, you can do these things, but it just says we're not going to stop you from doing these things that previously we would have.
So under the 2015 rules that, again, we keep getting back to,
yep.
Internet service providers couldn't charge, you know, me more money to put my little TV show out there versus Netflix or, you know,
that's right. They couldn't slow down your content. They couldn't give preferential treatment to certain people. And, you know, and honestly, you know, even with those rules, there are quite a few things those folks do anyway that are within that genre of preferential treatment. But yes, that's right. That's the real point of the 2015 regulation, to ensure that small content providers are not discriminated against versus large content providers.
Again, net neutrality is the topic today in the exchange. We are wading through what it means and looking at the possibilities around an FCC vote next week on whether to change current rules governing internet service providers. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Rob, let's go to our listeners. Jeff's calling in from Bedford. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Go ahead, Jeff.
So for a change in an issue this large and profound, why wouldn't this be a matter for Congress? And then, you know, secondly, this is something of value, right? Internet speed. Why shouldn't one business be able to charge another business for something that's of value?
Thank you so much for the call, Jeff. And, you know, your first question, Jeff, is exactly one I wanted to ask you, Rob, too. This has become such a huge issue. There's so much being said about this right now, especially in some corners of the internet, Rob. Why isn't Congress involved? Why is it up to this, you know, small commission that probably a lot of people have never heard of?
That's a great question. You know, I mean, of course, I don't make the rules here, but the rules currently are that the FCC is a 5-person committee chaired by Chairman Pai. They serve at the will of the president, right? They're appointed. Congress has oversight, but they do not report to Congress or need congressional approval. So, you know, as you said, December 14th, we're going to have a vote. And of course, there could be some court battles after that. But there's no congressional approval. Now, could someone propose a law in Congress? Absolutely. You know, that could happen tomorrow. And the FCC would be obliged to follow that law like any other. But at the moment, these are regulations controlled by the FCC. The committee will vote. Sometime after the vote, the policy will be changed and published. And there you go. And that's the end. I mean, that's the way it's laid out.
It's interesting because, again, this has attracted so much attention. And a lot of Americans are saying, whoa, what is this group? Who are they? Why should we listen to them?
Well, usually these are pretty boring things, right? Where techie nerds like me pay attention and nobody else. So you're right. I mean, it is a little unusual. It is a little unusual.
Thank you for that call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Rob, I want to dig a little bit more into this idea or this fear that some people have that if these if this 2015 net neutrality policy is overturned, it will hurt sort of upstarts, new content providers, the little guy. Let's hear a little bit from the co-founder of the news and social media site Reddit. This is Alex Ohanian. He's speaking on CNN in favor of net neutrality. He's concerned about this, what this might mean for small content providers, the new guys on the scene. This interview, by the way, is from July.
Net neutrality is all about conserving two things: consumer choice and access to information. And the reason the internet has been such an amazing place for so many of us to start businesses, get information, is because the free market picks winners and losers, and we want to keep it that way. The opponents we have in this fight are basically big cable and internet service providers who would rather be the ones picking those winners and losers.
So both sides of this debate claiming to be champions of the free market.
That's right.
Chairman Pai also saying he's a champion of the free market. So what is Alexis Ohanian really trying to say there?
Well, you know, what he's saying is really something that we all sort of embrace, right? The idea that, you know, you can, you know, if Laura creates some really great content on her site and everyone loves it, everyone should be able to get it. And some big, giant corporation who doesn't have the goods shouldn't be able to prevent you from having success. And, you know, if you look in the past, you know, that's sort of true, right? I mean, YouTube was this little website that had some videos and exploded, right? And took up tremendous resources across the internet. And if they were squelched, maybe they wouldn't have had their success. Maybe they wouldn't have become part of Google and gotten to be such a, you know, planet-wide sensation, right? And we've had examples in the past, Vonage and different peer-to-peer things that were done by providers. Netflix even was at one point paying for some premium delivery. So we've had some examples in the past where things have gone down the wrong way. And, you know, he's right in that regard. But Chairman Pai's defense on this is that that won't happen. That won't happen. It's not in the provider's best interest to throttle content or be unfair. And if they did, boy, they'd pay the price in the public eye.
Pay the price in the public eye in terms of people switching to other internet service providers?
That's what he says.
How easy is that to do in parts of the country that are not endowed with many, many internet service providers, including New Hampshire? I don't think we're crowded with internet service providers.
No, that's a really good point, Laura. And the issue is that most people don't have a big choice, right? I mean, if you live in New York City or Boston, yeah, sure, you might have two or three high-speed providers to choose from, maybe some fiber, maybe some high-speed wireless, maybe cable. But less than 25% of the people in this country have multiple high-speed broadband providers to choose from. So, you know, you get what you get. You don't get upset. And, you know, if you don't like your high-speed provider in most of the country, your alternatives are pretty slow. Dial-up, satellite, things that just really aren't what you want.
So to say, if companies behave badly, people can just switch, so they probably won't behave badly. You're saying maybe yes, maybe no, given that people really don't have a lot of choice. Not like dishwasher soap where you've got 15 choices.
Exactly. Depends on where you are.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. You can join us with a phone call or an email. The number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We're looking at net neutrality today in The Exchange, and we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. And Rob, let's take another call. This is Stephen from Berlin. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, wow. I never expected to get through.
You're on the air, Stephen. Go ahead.
Yes. What I'm wondering is how, well, actually, you previously just brought up the point. Most of the companies across the country, they don't actually compete for internet as an internet service provider. And last time they rolled back net neutrality, when they were working on the new legislation for it that they're trying to repeal now, the first thing Comcast did was try to strangle Netflix along with a couple of other companies. That's actually kind of what tanked their argument about it last time.
Interesting. Rob, do you want to jump in there? Thank you so much for the call, Stephen.
Yeah, there was certainly an issue about Netflix consuming a tremendous amount of Comcast backbone. And, you know, your previous caller brought that up as well. You know, people riding for free, right? The free ride was something that was discussed during the 2015 debate about this, right? I built, you know, if I'm a big internet provider, I'm spending billions of dollars on my network, and, you know, two guys in a garage consume half the capacity of my network with their content, and they're getting a free ride on my infrastructure, right? And that's sort of a, you know, a backlash that providers have said. They said, look, we're investing all of this stuff to enable the success of other people other than us. And that's not right. You know, if you want to use my highway, you know, perhaps unfairly or perhaps in a way that I don't want, you know, this is my network, my rules, you shouldn't be allowed to do that. You know, that's sort of the argument. So I think that those arguments are probably not going to be brought up this time because they're not particularly effective politically. But I think under the covers, there's certainly some feelings about that, that people have invested millions, billions in infrastructure and other people are benefiting from it and they're not getting a slice, right? And I think that that actually is perhaps the motivation as to why a bunch of these providers, and he brought up Comcast, and as I said before, they have a relationship with NBC, have also gotten into the content business where they said, hey, you know what? We're going to have our own content, right? We're going to deliver it on our network. And then we are going to get a slice of it, right? And you see more and more of that. I mean, back in the days when Time Warner and Time Warner Cable were one company, now you have Time Warner and Charter talking about mergers. And they're trying to look at it and say, hey, you know, we want a piece of this giant content revenue. And if we're going to deliver these bits anyway on our network, we should get some upside for it.
But then the question comes up, do they favor their content? So Comcast is the provider for a lot of folks here in Concord, myself included. So if I decided to create my little TV station again, would Comcast downplay how my content was accessed and play up its own content? Why not?
Well, you know, that's a fascinating question. So let me tell you a little bit about some things that not a lot of people know about, even today, with the current net neutrality rules, right? So there's a concept of where you live, right? I mean, if Laura's TV site is in China, and I'm sitting here in Concord, New Hampshire, and I want to watch it, you can probably believe that the quality of the video I'm going to get from you coming from China is not going to be as good as the quality of video being pumped out of a Boston branch of NBC on the Comcast network, right? Net neutrality aside, right? It's just where you are matters. So you can imagine that if you're in a partnership with NBC, that the NBC content would be very close, perhaps hosted on Comcast network itself, right? Because by the way, that's what happens, right? So the closer you are to the customers, the better quality those customers are going to get. And that's why people like Netflix have really partnered with a lot of these ISPs and put their content on the same network as the ISPs. So that way, when you watch your Netflix videos, they look great. Now, does that cost Netflix money? Of course it does, right? But is that fair? Well, hard to say, right? I mean, clearly Laura probably isn't going to get that invitation to be on the thousands of networks that exist in the web, and you certainly don't have enough money to do that anyway. So even today, there's certainly some unfairness with regard to delivery. There's also lots of examples of mobile providers who, as you know, you buy a mobile plan, you got 4 gigs a month or 2 gigs a month or whatever. There are certain content that these mobile providers give you for free. Right? Where, oh, well, if you watch this type of video, then it doesn't go against your data plan. Right? And they are certainly able to do that today and do, by the way. I mean, that's quite common. You say, oh, well, if you watch from this service, from the Verizon, well, I won't give examples because I don't want to call anybody out, but there are services with each mobile provider that you can watch and it doesn't go against your data plan. But then there are other services that do.
We should pick up on that after a short break because that's real interesting. And you're so right, Rob. So many people, even compared to just 2 years ago, watch video content on their phones today. So we'll pick up on that in a moment and take more of your calls, questions, comments, more on net neutrality in just a minute. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
When you really dig into history,
images like this one have New Yorkers thinking twice about the consequences of buying Northern Power.
We had lawsuits against Hydro-Québec, government of Quebec. We were suing everybody.
The more you realize the past is never past. This week, Outside In from NHPR presents the third in our 4-part series called Powerline. Learn all about the history of Canadian hydropower wherever you get your podcasts or at outsideinradio.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking again at net neutrality. There's been a lot of attention to this leading up to a Federal Communications Commission vote next week. The FCC will vote on a plan to reverse current rules governing internet service providers and go back to regulating them more lightly, the way they were up until 2 years ago. It's complicated, but we're unraveling it for you this hour. And so let's get your questions in right now. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Helping us out this hour, Rob Fleischman, principal architect at Akamai, an internet infrastructure company based in Cambridge. Rob has clients on both sides of this debate. And Rob, let's go right back to our listeners. And Gina's calling in from Enfield. Hi, Gina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Gina.
I was wondering, if we go back to the old regulations from prior to 2015, how would this affect, you know, the regular consumer like me and other people who are, you know, watching and using streaming internet services? Would this change, like, could they potentially change how fast or how slow we get our Netflix? Or would they say, like, if you pay this much, you'll only be able to download your Netflix at this speed, but, you know, regular browsing the web will be fine. Like, it'll be, you know, you won't notice any change in your speed. Like, are we talking about changes in speed based on, you know, what types of websites and different things we're using?
This is the fundamental question, Gina. I'm so glad that you called, because this is the big concern that you hear, Rob.
She's right on it, right? So that's a wonderful question. So I'll try and unpack it from top to bottom. So the Restoring Internet Freedom Act that PI is pushing for the FCC, which I believe, by the way, will be approved on December 14th, probably 3-2, reclassifies the common carriers, all these internet providers, as information service providers, removes all FCC oversight, leaving just the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, a commission which is powerful but has never done this type of oversight before, isn't as focused as the FCC. So what does that mean in English? What it means in English is the people that provide internet service to you will be forced to inform, right, in those giant documents that we all click agree on, without reading incredibly detailed, or if you really have no choice, inform you what their network policies are, but they will be permitted to control their network in basically any way they want. So could a scenario that she discusses where certain content is slower or you have to pay more to get the kind of speeds you were used to or pay more, you know, think about it like your cable, right? You pay a certain amount, you get a certain number of channels. You pay more, you get more channels, right? I could certainly imagine that scenario. Now, will that happen? I'm not sure. Could it happen? Is it legal for that to happen? Yes. If these rules are repealed, those things could happen.
So nobody really knows if that would happen or not.
We don't know. We don't have any guarantees as to what will happen. In fact, one of the arguments that Chairman Pai makes is that before the 2015 regulations, that didn't happen, or at least didn't happen in a widespread way.
You know, our caller, Gina, mentioned Netflix, and certainly that is something that comes up a lot because a lot of people love to watch the TV and movies available on Netflix on their phones. They don't want it slowed down. That's really irritating. Here is the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, speaking in July on CNBC about net neutrality. And it was interesting, Rob. I listened to the whole interview, and the interviewer said, gee, aren't you outraged about this policy? It could slow down people's access to your content. Here he is saying a reversal of the policy would not have a big impact on his company. Still, he called the possible rule change, to use his words, unfortunate.
Yeah, we're one of the largest suppliers of streaming, and so we're probably relatively insulated. The real impact around net neutrality would be on small firms, you know, the Netflix of 10 years ago. So it is super important, again, for the society. But I think that even if they unwind the Title II rules, my guess would be that the net neutrality principles are still followed.
So I would love to hear from you on that, Rob, because in that interview, he's kind of like, well, it's unfortunate. Well, net neutrality is, quote, important for society, but it won't hurt us, he said. And he's confident that the companies, the internet service providers, would still follow the principles of net neutrality.
Wow, this is a tough one for Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix. The interesting words were Netflix of 10 years ago. So
when they were the little guy.
That's right. So they're no longer the little guy anymore. They're a multi-billion dollar corporation with thousands of servers spread throughout all the internet providers in the world. So why wouldn't it affect Netflix? I'll tell you why. Because Netflix servers are co-resident, right? They're on... Think about it like your city street, right? If you want to drive to the grocery store, you got to go out your driveway, you got to go down your street, you got to go through a bunch of toll booths, maybe on the highway, et cetera, et cetera. Well, to get to Netflix, they're already on your corner, right? They've built systems everywhere. So when you...
What does that mean exactly? They've built systems everywhere.
That means there are Netflix servers that are close to almost all the endpoints. They're in almost all the providers in the United States and in many places on the world. So when Laura, when you're streaming from Netflix, I can assure you, you're not pulling content from California. You're pulling it locally. It's very close. So Mr. Hastings is right that it probably wouldn't affect Netflix because they're already on all these providers' networks. They're already close to the consumers. The cost of the providers streaming Netflix is very low at the moment, as opposed to, you know, Rob Fleischman's streaming service, which if it got popular would be very expensive for the providers. So I agree with them. I don't think that whether these rules are rolled back or kept in place, I don't think it'll have much, if any, effect on Netflix. But the next Netflix, an up-and-coming Netflix, could have a large impact on them.
Well, we heard a clip earlier from the co-founder of, again, the news and social media site Reddit, saying, you know, this would hurt us and our ability to get our content out there.
Absolutely. They're not nearly as pervasive as Netflix is spread throughout the world. I mean, Reddit certainly has a bunch of servers in different places, but they don't have the reach and breadth that Netflix does and don't have the money that Netflix does. So, you know, it's really becoming protect the small guy. And I think Reed Hastings did say that, you know, he admitted to that, right? He said that this is...
It's unfortunate.
That's right. It's unfortunate, and it may affect the small people. This really could, if you know, things head the wrong way after this repeal, it could really be a have and have not scenario on the internet.
What about the idea that the internet service providers have made, and you touched on this earlier, Rob, but again, you know, they maintain the infrastructure, they offer the infrastructure, they in part built the infrastructure, so they need to reap some of the benefits of that infrastructure.
Well, that's a good point. That's all true. But on the other hand, we pay them, right? We are the customers, right? I mean, last time I checked, we all pay a monthly internet bill. It's not free, certainly not inexpensive compared to what other people in the rest of the world pay for a whole heck of a lot more speed and services. So we pay a premium price, and I think it's fair for us to expect a premium delivery. On the other hand, you are correct. I mean, they have had to provide internet service to places that are unprofitable. I can assure you, we live in New Hampshire, running high-speed broadband fiber cable up into northern New Hampshire, probably not going to be very profitable, right? You're not going to have a lot of customers up there, but you have to do it. On the other hand, they have these regionalized monopolies, if you will. You know, there's not a lot of choice. So, you know, if you want broadband, you're going to pay. And you're going to pay probably one provider.
Here's an email from Ellis in Grantham who says, the World Wide Web was created by the federal government, not big corporations. This is taxpayer money. Ellis says, shouldn't that investment, still perhaps going on, assure everyone equal access? Ellis, thank you for the email. What do you think, Rob?
Well, she's right. I mean, you know, look, my career started at a place called BBN, where BBN Planet was. We ran the New England portion of the internet, certainly funded by the government. No question. Absolutely. World Wide Web came out of the W3C, MIT, lots of government research money there. I did work for them, too. So, yeah, absolutely. Our origins of the government. Of course, you know, that can be said by a lot of things, right? Our space program, we have spun off tons of technology, right? The GPS system, all that stuff is government research. And yeah, the origins of the internet, of course, are from the federal government money. But that's a while ago. Things have transitioned. All these networks are now privately run, deregulated to some extent. And, you know, what Chairman Pai is doing is continuation of that theme, right? Less heavy touch, less regulation.
Which he says will spawn more innovation, better service. That's the hope.
That is certainly the hope. That is his thesis.
Here's an email from Jim who says, Comcast owns NBC and is currently in negotiations with Dish about pricing that might stop that delivery. If they have no constraints, maximizing profits suggests they use monopoly power to force increased bundled services on consumers. Jim says, broadband without common carrier protections is a license to abuse what must be viewed as an essential public infrastructure. Jim, thank you for the email. And on that last point, Rob, I guess this is the philosophical debate, right? Is the internet a service provided by private companies that you can pay for high quality or not? Or is it public infrastructure. I mean, we wouldn't say, you know, you live in a small low-income housing project, so you're going to have worse water in the city of Concord. I mean, everybody in Concord is supposed to get the same quality of water. So is it public infrastructure or is it a private service that you have to pay for?
That is really, really difficult debate, right? And that is sort of what the FCC is tasked with talking about, right? Are these people common carriers, right? Are they things that should be dial tone-like, water, electricity-like, or are they just information services, private information services? And, you know, your caller makes a great point. You know, we've quickly come to depend on these services, and they've become more and more like public assets. And, you know, that I think is a really strong point that I'm unsure that the FCC is addressing, right? I mean, between 2015 and now, we've become more and more dependent on this, more and more dependent on any piece of information we want anywhere we are. And that trend is continuing. So is it right? Is now the time to actually go the reverse direction where you're saying, well, you know, this infrastructure isn't public. It's not for the public good. It shouldn't be ubiquitous. It shouldn't be available for everyone with the same high quality and guarantees. It should be these private things. And, you know, you have a private relationship with whoever your provider is and they do what you like. And if you don't like them, you choose somebody else. You know, that's really the nexus of the argument. You know, and maybe it's a philosophical argument. You know, maybe that's where it's come down.
Or it's an evolving thought process that maybe 20 years ago you didn't see the internet as public infrastructure, but today you do.
Is it, the reality is that, is Chairman Pai right? Is taking off these supposed handcuffs on all these providers going to spur incredible innovation and now we're going to have, you know, multi-gigabit speeds everywhere for cheap, you know? Or is it going to go the reverse where it's, hey, you get really bad service, and if you pay a little more, you get less bad service, right? Those are the extremes of the arguments, right? It's either going to be incredible innovation or horrible abuse.
Well, great questions from our listeners today. And here's another just really basic question from Ryan in Walpole, who, again, raises an important point. He says, can you explain why companies, if they don't plan to throttle bandwidth, are opposed to net neutrality? What is it costing them now? Ryan, thank you for the question.
That's a great one. So the whole point here really is not that specific parts of the net neutrality bill are punitive to providers, but providers need to make sure that they have capacity for all types of content and
do it
equally, right? So
as content explodes, they have to increase their capacity.
You got it.
And they're saying, look, that's expensive.
That is expensive, absolutely. And I have to do it ubiquitously, right? So I have to make sure the people way up in Berlin, New Hampshire get good quality service as well as the ones down here in Nashua that are, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump away from Boston where there's lots of great bandwidth, right? So let's not, pretend that that's not that's free. It's not. It's expensive, right? And that is the pushback. So it isn't, hey, you know, I really want to penalize this, that, and the other thing. It's, I want to run a profitable business. And without these regulations, I can be more profitable, right? So, of course, I'm motivated toward that. I'm a private business. I want to make money. I want to make as much as possible, or I want to charge as much as possible for the same level of service. And that's really what it comes down to. It's an economic thing.
So they, the internet service providers, they see it as, look, we have built and maintained this road. Now there are so many more cars, if I can put it that way, content providers on this road. And it's expensive for us to, you know, pave it wider and keep it maintained. So we would like to be able to charge different entities more money.
Absolutely. Or provide different levels of service. Right. Absolutely. So I think that's the assumed direction the providers are going.
Well, Ryan, thank you for the email. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Rob, here's another email. This is Steve, who says, ISP, internet service providers, profits of 90% or more are proof that these internet service providers are not hurting. Having the ability to step on / slow down competitor content stifles innovation. Conflict of interest. This is why liquor distributors are not allowed to own bars. Double profits. Regulate ISPs, Steven says, and don't allow them to slow down content. So that's his thought.
He makes a great point there. These are wildly profitable companies, right? I mean, none of these guys are going under. In fact, they're talking about mergers, acquisitions, massive expansion. Absolutely. So, I mean, I agree. I think everything he said is correct. The real issue is not that they're hurting or on the edge of bankruptcy. I don't think that's anybody's. I don't think anybody's bringing that up. But that's not politically. That's not a politically strong argument either. But what they are saying, what Chairman Pai is saying, is that by letting back on the regulations, we're going to unleash innovation. Prices are going to go down. Access is going to go up. We're going to have all these great new services and higher speeds. That's the thesis of the FCC. Now, look, I agree with what he's saying. He's pointing out facts, but that's not really what's being debated.
Well, and he says in his email, Stephen says, don't allow them to slow down content. That's the fear. We don't know if internet service providers will do that.
That's correct.
If these regulations
that's correct.
Are
it is
taken
an
off.
Assumption, And Chairman Pai brings up a point. He says that, look, that to most extent wasn't done pre-2015. There weren't these different tiers of internet service, and he doesn't believe that that'll happen.
Let's hear Chairman Pai talking about this again, raising that point that you made. And he gets a little technical in this clip, Rob. But again, it's him making the point that you just made. This is just a return to a previous policy. Things were not terrible prior to 2015, and they won't be terrible if this changes. Let's hear.
Until 2015, the FCC treated high-speed internet access as a lightly regulated information service under Title I of the Communications Act. A few years ago, the Obama administration instructed the FCC to change course, and the FCC did. On a party-line vote in 2015, it classified internet access as a heavily regulated telecommunications service under Title II of the Communications Act. If the plan is adopted on December 14th, we will simply reverse the FCC's 2015 decision and go back to the pre-2015 Title I framework.
So again, that's FCC Chairman Ajit Pai making that point. This is not that big a deal, folks. Everybody calm down. Why do you think there has been so much uproar about this, Rob? Because, boy, you start digging around online and very quickly you see, dramatic titles like The End of the Internet as We Know It and Crushing Innovation and why Chairman Pai wants to, kill what makes the internet great.
Absolutely. So I'll bring up 2 points
why
to address
so much drama?
This. I'll bring up 2 points to address this. First thing was that Chairman Pai's thesis right there was, hey, pre-2015, everything was fine, right? No problems. Everything's great. No sweat. Okay, so that's fine. On the FCC committee, member Claiborne, who—
Because there are five commissioners.
There are five commissioners.
Right.
So I believe she brought up the same argument back to him. She says, well, Chairman Pai, since 2015— Right. All of this stifling of innovation, all of these high fees, all of this lack of expansion that you claim was going to happen. Because remember, Chairman Pai was against this rule in 2015. He voted against it.
The net neutrality rule
was not in favor of it, passed despite his negative feelings about it and his objections. Guess what? None of the bad things that he was fearful of happened either. So pre-2015, everything was fine. Post-2015, everything was fine, right? So we could play the same game, right? But so that argument, about, everything was great, we could just sort of push that aside. But I would also say that the world's different. Look, we all know that our wireless devices are streaming so much more than they used to 2 years ago. The internet continues to change. It's not 2015 anymore. Our need for content everywhere and larger networks with more capacity everywhere is exponentially higher.
We will talk more in just a moment. More on net neutrality coming up. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, how should internet service providers be regulated? We're looking once again at the debate over what's called net neutrality, leading up to a Federal Communications Commission vote next week. Let's get your questions and comments in. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter, you can respond there as NHPR Exchange, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Rob Fleischman is here helping us out, helping us figure out what net neutrality means, what this plan from the FCC chairman might mean. He's principal architect at Akamai, an internet infrastructure company based in Cambridge. And Rob, let's go right back to our listeners. And Andrew's in Keene. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I apologize if this has kind of already been addressed. I kind of missed part of it, but I'm wondering, about the economic arguments, considering it seems to me more and more these days that companies are better off acquiring other companies rather than trying to create a startup. So if you could answer how this is supposed to help with that.
Are you worried about mergers, Andrew, or are you worried about small startups?
Kind of both. Uh-huh. Here in Keene, we literally have two options for our broadband, Fairpoint, and I guess it's called Spectrum now. And I've never used Fairpoint because of all the horror stories I've heard, particularly from some of my friends who are forced to use it. And it's not good.
Yeah. All right. Andrew, thank you so much. Two important points, mergers and startups and how they might fare.
Wow. Well, you know, we're going to wander off a little bit here, but let me just say this. So there's a typical argument used when large providers merge, right? So let's say Fleischmann.net and Kanoi.net want to merge together. Well, the various entities that we're going to pitch this to are going to say, well, what happens here? You know, are we getting rid of competition? Are Fleischmann.net and Kanoi.net competing? And then when we merge, the competition's going to go away? So I make this wonderful case to them. I say, well, you know what? Kanoi.net and Fleischmann.net, we don't overlap at all. We have, by merging together, we're not reducing competition at all. Now, of course, the sad thing about it is, there was no competition. You had a monopoly. I had a monopoly.
I had the southern half of the state.
That's
you
right.
The northern
now
half.
Together we have a bigger monopoly. So your caller kind of makes that point that, you know, that there isn't a lot of competition in these places. And I said before, you know, less than 25% of the people in the United States have more than one choice for high-speed broadband. So, we're in a situation now, and, you know, it's gotten organically through merger and acquisition where people that provide high-speed data have these regional monopolies. Now, whether they're blessed regional monopolies or whether they just happen to be that way because it's difficult to build giant infrastructure.
Well, and here's an email from Rob in Newmarket who says, Newmarket is not a tiny town, but not a city. He says, I have exactly one choice, Comcast, for internet service provider. Before the implementation of current net neutrality rules, Comcast at one point decided to block many internet protocols in an effort to stop people who were stealing content via BitTorrent. And he goes on to explain what happened there. And he concludes by saying, if we all lived in cities with dozens of choices, the market might work to regulate the internet on its own. But, Rob says, since there are de facto monopolies across the vast majority of the country, the market can't do anything to push providers to do the right thing. That seems to be the point that you were making earlier.
He's right. It's funny. He's bringing back some old brain cells. You know, so he's talking about BitTorrent, which was a peer-to-peer protocol that Comcast recognized was doing some pretty bad, shady stuff. I won't get into the particulars of what people were using BitTorrent for, but it wasn't good, and it bordered on – some of it was illegal. So they used technology actually from a company called Sandvine, where I actually used to work many years ago, to do blocking, regulating that content. And, of course – they got their hand slapped for doing that. That was not something that was in the spirit of network neutrality, reaching in and messing around with people's content. I think Comcast, in their defense, I think they had good intentions there. I think they didn't want illegal or bad content, but it was also having a big effect on their network.
Well, and Rob goes on to say, this is in the middle of his email, he says, instead of just blocking BitTorrent protocols, they blocked many ports and protocols. In doing so, Comcast inadvertently blocked my VPN to my office.
Yeah.
He says, this leaves me in the situation where, since there are no rules of the road for providers, they can do anything they want. And since they have a monopoly, there is no recourse for the consumer.
He puts out a great argument. And there were a few, right? So there was Vonage, which was a voice over IP provider. Of course, Netflix throttling, YouTube issues, peer-to-peer issues. Those were some of the great examples from long ago where providers, stepped on people's toes, did some things they probably shouldn't have done. And he brings up a good point. Without the regulations, they would be free to do such things again. Now, Chairman Pai says they wouldn't do that. There would be pressure from the internet community. Your customer points out, when you have no choice, what kind of pressure can you provide? Those are difficult.
Thank you for the email, Robert. And let's go back to the phones. Dorothy joins us from Leominster. Hi, Dorothy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. What prompted this call was when he was saying that things were perfectly fine before 2015. Now we just want to go back to 2015. The problem is that the net neutrality was proposed back in before the 2015, before it got created, because they were afraid of things happening and because things were outpacing what was going on before. The thing that you alluded to going back to 1950, I allude more to going back to the horse and buggy. I'm on DSL.
Right.
Wow.
I have no choice. I have Fairpoint. They do not provide broadband to me because our little area is too small and they wouldn't get enough money from it. So we can go ahead and just deal with our DSL. I have no choice. Fairpoint is the only company I have access to.
Well, Dorothy, Fairpoint, you raised two really important points, and one is that access to high-speed internet in rural communities like yours and the North Country more broadly is very important. And businesses say, look, you're stifling us. Like, we want to take off, but we can't. So I appreciate that point, Dorothy. But the other point she makes that I think is also important, Rob, is, you know, sometimes the way this is presented is that, you know, the FCC under President Obama just kind of snapped its fingers one day and said, boom, net neutrality. Dorothy is right. There were years and years and years
lots
of debate,
of, lots
complaints.
Of lobbying. You bet.
Yeah, so it was like 10 years in the making.
You bet. It took a long time, right? I think it started in the early 2000s, 2004, 2005. There was discussion because of some of these problems. She brings up a great point. It certainly wasn't a snap your fingers. And there were millions of dollars of lobbying and, you know, all this stuff going on there to alter that rule. And, you know, but Obama's presidency was strong for the consumer, right? Very, very consumer focused. And that's how this these regulations came about. Now we're in a presidency where it's much more, hey, let's uncouple the shackles of these businesses and let them run. And I would... Let me just pretend I was Chairman Pai. I'm going to put myself in his shoes. He would answer it and say, well, look, you know, you have a couple megabits from Fairpoint up in northern New Hampshire. Now, if I only unleash the regulations on Fairpoint, they would then have the resources to expand and give you more bandwidth up in these areas because they wouldn't be shackled by our heavy regulations. That would be the argument. Whether you believe that or not, that's up to you. But that is the conjecture. They're saying we have heavily regulated these providers. We made it difficult for a new provider to start up there in North Country and provide a competition to Fairpoint. So by rolling back these regulations, we're going to unleash competition and innovation, and you'll have better service. That's the theory.
So the vote is December 14th, as we've said. Who else besides FCC Chairman Pai will be voting, Rob?
Well, we have five members. We got O'Reilly. We have Carr, we have Clyburn, we have Rosenworcel. The pronunciation escapes me. There are two Democrats, O'Reilly and Clyburn, who are most likely will vote against it. So I suspect it'll pass 3-2 on the 14th. It'll probably take a couple weeks. Let's call it end of the year before the regulations are published back out to the world and you'll be able to see them. So my guess is January 1 will be under a... different set of rules. I strongly suspect that there will be court cases filed. I suspect that, you know, I'm no lawyer, but I suspect that the thesis of those court cases will be that the FCC did not follow the proper process, that they ignored comments. There'll be all kinds of legal, hey, they didn't do the way they were supposed to do it.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. Since you mentioned the comments, Rob, I did want to ask you, as you know, this proposal has created a huge, huge, huge uproar.
Absolutely.
You know, reportedly millions of negative comments, mostly coming into the FCC. What do we know about these comments? Some supporters of Chairman Pai and his proposal say, look, this isn't real grassroots. This is just AstroTurf.
Well, you know, in a day in late May this year, hundreds of thousands of comments were submitted to the FCC website. And then a few weeks later, about a week and a half later on June 3rd, hundreds of thousands of more comments were submitted. Now, what were these comments, right? These were obviously not people. In fact, there's been this study You know, some folks dissected these comments, discovered that they were mostly bots using some natural language generation to artificially amplify.
Okay, tell our non-techie listeners what a bot is.
Okay, so it's basically someone wrote some software to say, hey, let me impersonate a person submitting a comment to the FCC website. So they took a bunch of words, scrambled them up a little bit, made it look like a comment, you know, changed some, you know, he to she, things like that to make them all look different. But basically, there were millions and millions of submissions to the FCC website that were automated, that were done by robots, by computers, by software, rather than by people. So we have this weird scenario where the FCC opened up the website to comments, and they got millions of them that were fake, if you will, fake comments. So I believe Chairman Pai, you know, basically said, hey, you know, we opened up the website and we got a bunch of goo, you know, so I'm going to dismiss all of that input. It wasn't legitimate, and I'm going to continue.
Although some of it must have been legitimate,
well, of course,
given what we've
was,
heard from our listeners today.
There's no question. There's been some real uproar. And, you know, there's a website, battleforthenet.com, which is a real excellent source of information on net neutrality and discussing preserving internet freedom. And if you fall on that side of the argument, then that's a good place for you to start.
Last question for you, Rob, please. What's most important for listeners to understand about this? You've done a great job breaking it down piece by piece. People have asked great questions. Again, really fundamental how this affects them. But what's the most important thing that folks should be watching?
I think the most important thing is that we have moved from a presidency administration that is focused mostly on deregulation. I mean, that's really the thesis. And it is no surprise to me that people who are appointed by this administration are going to move in that direction. And that's really the bottom line. Now, whether that deregulation results in good or bad, it remains to be seen. We all have our doubts. We have our fears. I share them, too. I'm also an end user. I also don't have a lot of choices for internet providers either. But the real thing to remember here is this is about regulation and rolling those back. And that's what's going to happen. And
all right.
We'll see how this rolls out with lawsuits and Congress perhaps taking some action. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful good things will happen. But, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst.
So a big step taken by the FCC next week. But the story maybe doesn't end there based on what you just said.
It will not.
All right, Rob, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Laura, always a pleasure being here.
Rob Fleischman, principal architect at Akamai, an internet infrastructure company based in Cambridge. Rob has clients on both sides of this net neutrality debate. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.